This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's Daily Politics Podcast. I'm Isabel Harbin and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. Well, we have some uncomfortable news for the government's testing programme today, which is that 43,000 PCR tests that were sent back to the people who took them as being negative may in fact have been positive. James, just explain how on earth this has happened.
Yeah, and in recent days, people have been scratching their heads about why so many people were testing positive on lateral flows, particularly in the southwest, and then getting a negative PCR result. Now, the assumption had always been that PCR was the superior test to the lateral flow. And so the rules allow people who got a positive on a lateral flow, but then a negative on PCR, to basically go back to living life as normal. Because the assumption would be if you were negative on PCR, you were negative. This testing lab in Wolverhampton, which basically seemed to have been returning negative results to everyone, regardless of their status, is the accusation. That has rather blown out. But as you say, this has two obvious impacts. One is that the UK case rate has been a bit higher than we thought, which is significant given the recent rise in cases. And then, as you also say as well, there is obviously a point that these people have been out and about in the community. Presumably, they may well have spread the virus to some other people. And I think this comes at a time when you are beginning to see a bit of discussion about whether there needs to be a kind of a thumb put on the scale, some greater encouragement given to people to go back to mask wearing on public transport and the like. Now, at the moment, I think it is worth noting that the cases are well below what some of the predictions for what would happen if restrictions were lifted had it as. But I think that the R rate is now over one on the Spectator's model and has been for a few days now. And I think if it doesn't drop back, I think if this time next week the R rate has been over one for a whole week, I think this debate will begin to come back. I think you will begin to see a debate about whether there should be an encouragement of the lower cost interventions. I don't think anyone is talking about a return to the rule of six or lockdown or anything like that. But should England follow Scotland's lead, for example, on where you have to wear a mask, that kind of thing. So I think the next week is going to be quite important to see what happens with the virus and what political pressure builds in terms of action.
Fraser, we've got this wonderful data hub at The Spectator. Just talk us through what that's telling us at the moment.
Well, the great thing about the Data Hub, you can find it on data.spectator.co.uk, is that you can look at all of these things yourself at any time. You don't have to wait for a journalist to tell you what is and isn't going on. And you can see for yourself what does and doesn't look worrying. Right now, if you look at the number of positive tests, that is increasing quite a lot. It's up 13% week on week. It's now the highest since the post-lockdown peak last July. You can also see what this is doing to NHS daily COVID admissions. Now, they were basically, at the peak, there were just over 4,000 of them in January. That was the worst of the Delta variant. Now, after reopening in July, they increased to about 800, and now they're almost back there again. They're at 760 admissions every day. And when it comes to patients in hospital, we're now back over the 5,000. So that's 5% of NHS beds are occupied by people with COVID. Now, of course, you can cast your mind back to similar patterns this time last year. We had the Halloween press conference, which announced the lockdown, where Patrick Vallance was pointing to these autumnal trends and saying if it was bad in autumn, it would get worse in winter. The great fear in the government is that flu comes along and piles on top of COVID a massive hospital caseload. The strange thing is, though, that you can certainly see that the link between cases and hospital admissions is nowhere near what it was in Delta. That hasn't changed. If anything, the link is getting weaker. So there is no reason now to look at these figures and think, well, we're going to have to lock down again, we're going to have to do more social distancing. But that could change quite quickly. The other thing that we're tracking, of course, in the Data Hub is the overall decline in things like NHS appointments, 7 million fewer of them since lockdown. Then there is the decline in diabetes diagnosis. We heard earlier on today there have been millions fewer diagnoses of that. In other words, if you do sort of raise the alert, do lockdown, it will have a side effect of discouraging people from using the health service, and that too will have a very real impact on things like cancer diagnosis and basic health diagnosis. So I think the data picture now is a lot more balanced than it used to be. This time last year, all we were ever shown was the COVID figures. Now we can see all aspects of the health service, including the massive waiting lists, which are actually beginning to go down quite a lot. So if you look at the number of people waiting more than 52 weeks, there were none of them before the pandemic. Then there turns out to be 400,000 at the beginning of this year. And now that is making its way back down to about 300,000. So there is sign of progress, and also a sign of progress that could be reversed if the government does decide to press the COVID panic button again.
James, this is going to be uncomfortable, whatever happens for number 10, because the view that I picked up quite strongly from people, particularly at the Tory party conference, was that COVID's kind of over now and it's time to move on. I mean, Boris Johnson in his conference speech said it's all over now, it's all okay now, I think were his precise words. And it's not as though they don't have lots of other things to think about. So we have the ongoing saga of HGV drivers. Today we've had changes to cabotage, which will stop a sabotage of the supply chains. Just explain what the latest decision is. Yes, badum ching there.
So under the UK-EU trade deal, there are limitations into how many stops an EU trucker can make when in the UK. What these rules do is essentially say that when an EU trucker comes to make a delivery in the UK, they can then make as many deliveries after that as they want on their way back across the channel. And the theory is that this should ease some of the supply chain pressures. Now, critics of this decision will say, look, you've done this without any reciprocity on the EU side. I personally think this is a sensible response to the UK's supply chain issues and the clear shortage that the UK has of HGV drivers at the moment. But I think that combined with the butcher's U-turn yesterday, you'll remember that rather ill-tempered Boris Johnson Andrew Marr interview at conference when he basically implied he wasn't prepared to issue these extra visas for butchers that the food processing industry and the meat industry wants. You know, all of this, I think, is a sign of how concerned the government are about Christmas. And this isn't just the UK. I mean, this week you had Joe Biden intervening in the US to get the Port of Los Angeles to be open 24/7. And you also had the Biden administration, even with that decision, admitting that people were going to have to accept that some of the things that they expect on the shelves this Christmas are not going to be there. You know, there's also fears in the US they won't have enough turkeys for Thanksgiving. So I think these shortages and the Christmas question, if you like, I mean, Christmas is, even in normal times, Christmas is a huge strain on the food supply chain because people, A, eat more, but also buy their food further in advance than they normally do because people don't really want to go food shopping on Boxing Day. But I think these reversals, these policy shifts in government, show the concerns there are about the supply chain right now and what effects the supply chain troubles could have on the festive period.
Fraser, what does this tell us about Boris Johnson? Because he's been sticking to a line about the need for a higher wage economy, but it seems that as soon as he feels he's becoming unpopular, he changes his mind.
Well, when it comes to salaries, they are going up at quite a pace. Our colleague Kate Andrews has an economics email sent out free every Friday, and the graph from the email this morning shows that the latest average salary is just short of 24 grand a year. Now, this was 20 grand a year in 2017, so that's quite an increase in a relatively short period of time. So we are living in a country where wages are rising by an average 8%. Now, you could argue that's a statistical blip. It's the average is higher because there are fewer lower-waged people in the economy. But certainly, if you look at the job vacancies, the amount you can get by being a lorry driver right now is way, way more than it was 6-7 months ago. If you're Boris Johnson, then that's a win. He strongly believes that the the salary for lorry drivers was pushed down because Eastern Europeans were willing to come here and do a very difficult job for far less money, and that made a lot of other lorry drivers worse off as a result. Now, of course, you've got the conundrum. What are you going to do if there aren't enough skilled workers? So you're allowing, I think, is it 5,000 James lorry drivers? That we've granted visas for 5,000.
But the take-up is very poor.
It's a few hundred, isn't it? Yeah. So this is the rather embarrassing thing. Even if the Prime Minister were to throw open the floodgates for butchers, for HGV drivers, he will find that every country in Europe is pretty much facing shortages for the same sort of people. And there simply isn't a rush of skilled people willing to come here and do these jobs. Now, the opinion polls show that people don't mind this. Brits have never had a problem with skilled migration to Britain. It's unskilled that was the issue.
I think it's actually the point about the visas is important. Now, you can criticise the design of a scheme. You can say that the visas don't last long enough. But I think one of the problems we have in the UK debate is that both the proponents of Brexit and the opponents of Brexit want to exaggerate its impact on the current situation. So you have Boris Johnson saying, the shortage is all part of our transition to a higher wage economy post-Brexit. You've got Remainers saying, if we hadn't left the EU, we would have enough lorry drivers. I don't think either of those statements accurately sums up the current situation. I think one of the things that makes the situation difficult is that you are facing this profound shortage of lorry drivers in the UK, in the US, in the EU, which makes trying to use immigration to manage the problem more difficult. And I think that is one of the things that is affecting everyone's supply chains right now, which is that, you know, that usual answer doesn't really apply now because, you know, our nearest market in the EU is having the same problem. And so, you know, I mean, there's talks that the Irish government are trying to negotiate with the Argentinian government about getting more lorry drivers in and trying to essentially recognising Argentinian qualifications. Like, you see all of these things that are playing out. And I think that the problem at the moment is that there isn't a slack in the global economy to kind of pick this up. There aren't a whole bunch of lorry drivers sitting around waiting to be employed somewhere else.
The interesting dichotomy here, Isabel, it makes me think of this quote from House of Cards. There are two sorts of pain, the sort of pain that makes you strong or useless pain, the sort of pain that's only suffering. Now, Boris Johnson will say that right now the pain we're going through makes us strong, that we're going through this transition right now, that yes, it's a pain that we can't get petrol in the way we used to, we can't get find shortages, but this is necessary pain because this is the birthing pain of his new higher wage economy. Where in fact the truth might be, it might just simply be useless pain, because wages, I mean, there was some fascinating research I saw a few days ago saying that there isn't actually a worker shortage in most of the economy, that what we're seeing now is just delays for a whole bunch of other reasons that is not going to translate into the kind of increases that Boris Johnson wants to see. If we're going to have a Christmas of useless pain, then that will rebound quite badly. I guess we'll have to see. You know, we have certainly seen, as I was saying earlier, job increases, salary increases, but is that a result of the shortages? Or are the shortages simply pain for no reason?
Now, Fraser, as you said that quote reminded us of Nadine Dorries reading it out for a Spectator House of Cards video many years ago that we did. So here to end the podcast is Nadine Dorries telling us about the different sorts of pain. Thanks for listening.
There are two kinds of pain. The sort of pain that makes you strong, or useless pain. I have no patience for useless things.